Hi, I'm Alex Wellerstein. I'm a historian of science who specializes in nuclear history, and I'm a professor at the Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey, as well as a visiting researcher at the Nuclear Knowledges Project at Sciences Po, a university in Paris, France. My new book from HarperCollins is The Most Awful Responsibility, Truman and the Secret Struggle for Control of the Atomic Age. It is an atomic biography of President Harry Truman, covering primarily the years he was in office, from 1945 through 1953. So in this book, I'm taking a new, fresh look at everything from the use of the atomic bombs against Japan during World War II, through the decisions not to use nuclear weapons in the Korean War. This period is one of the most important historical moments of the Cold War, and arguably the most important for establishing that atomic bombs were not going to be used as normal military weapons after World War II. It is also the period in which the use of atomic bombs becomes centralized in the person of the president, which is an issue we still are thinking through today. The essential argument of my book is that Harry Truman was far more anti-nuclear than anyone gives him credit for. He was, I argue, deeply horrified by the idea of using atomic weapons, which he associated with the, quote, slaughter and, quote, murder of women and children. These are all his words for how he talked about the atomic bomb and what it did. He worked very hard after World War II to keep nuclear weapons out of the hands of the United States military. And just one example I'll give you of his feelings on this. He had a meeting in July 1948 during the Berlin airlift when the military officials were pushing very hard to get control over nuclear weapons. And Truman cut them off completely. And he lectures them in this meeting, according to the diary account we have of someone who was there, about why he is doing this. And so this is a quote. Quote, "It is a terrible thing to order the use of something that is so terribly destructive, destructive beyond anything we have ever had. You have got to understand that this isn't a military weapon. It is used to wipe out women and children and unarmed people, and not for military uses. So we have got to treat this differently from rifles and cannon and ordinary things like that." Unquote. Now, this meeting was classified, it was secret, and in these kinds of secret settings, Truman would often let his, real opinions about the atomic bomb be heard clearly. He would describe it as a weapon that, quote, affects the civilian population and murders them by the wholesale. He repeatedly uses words describing it as a terrible weapon, and he described the decision to use it as the most terrible decision that any man in the history of the world had to make. Now, you might be thinking, how do we square this with the fact that Harry Truman is the only president who ever used the atomic bomb in war? And he also always defended that throughout his career. So there's an obvious paradox here. And so the book can be thought of as a way to resolve this paradox. How does Harry Truman become the only president to use nuclear weapons? And how does he become do this while being so anti-nuclear weapons? It's not so unresolvable because they're related to each other. So the first third of the book discusses the lead-up and immediate aftermath of the use of the atomic bombs over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And unlike most accounts of this you might have heard, I really try to laser in on exactly what Truman himself did and did not know about the bomb and the plans to use it. Now, there's a narrative about the atomic bombs where Truman is the decider who, you know, makes this difficult decision, weighing the pros and cons. And scholars have known for decades now that is not true. That's not actually what happened. That is not the role that Truman had in this. The more standard way that historians talk about this is similar to how General Leslie Groves, the head of the Manhattan Project that made the atomic bombs, and one of the people who was actually doing a lot of the planning for how they were used, how he put it, which he described Truman's role as, quote, one, essentially one of non-interference, basically a decision not to upset the existing plans, unquote. What my research has found is goes a bit further than this. My thesis is that Truman did not actually understand the existing plans very well, and that what he believed them to be was quite different from what they actually were. And so in particular, I'm just going to give you a list of a few of the things I have concluded. This is from a very close reading of the archival sources and has caused me over the years to come to believe it is more likely than not that this is the way in which it went down. So number one, Truman believed that Hiroshima was, as he put it, purely a military target, a military base, and not a city full of women and children. Already, that's kind of a big one, I know. Number two, he came to this misconception, because Hiroshima was a city, he came to this misconception because he only took part in actually one major atomic decision prior to the atomic bombings. This was the decision to take Kyoto off of the target list, which was what his Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, really wanted to do for a variety of reasons. And in Stimson's attempt to get Truman to agree with him, because Stimson was not confident that the military would listen to Stimson's authority on this, Truman misunderstood what the choice was. That he believed that the choice between Kyoto and Hiroshima as targets is the choice between a city and a military base. And Truman believed that he made the decision that the first use of the bomb would not be against the city, which was not what happened. So three, Truman did not learn of the reality of the situation, that Hiroshima was a city, until August 8th, 1945, so 2 days after the attack. Four, Truman had no understanding that a second atomic bomb would be ready to use within a few days of the first, and had no forewarning at all about the attack on Nagasaki, which was, in fact, already underway the moment he learned that Hiroshima was a city. Five, the day after the Nagasaki strike, Truman ordered that atomic bombings needed to be stopped. And he told his cabinet that the reason was because he had he felt a horror at killing, quote, all those kids. And that this, in a way, is Truman's first truly informed decision about the atomic bombs during World War II, and was a direct consequence of the fact that he now felt that he had lost control of this new weapon and that the military were sort of doing their own thing with it, unauthorized. Six, and finally, these sentiments, this conflict between the military and Truman about the bomb as this weapon that destroys civilians and not a military weapon, this persisted throughout his presidency. This led him to largely deny the military any physical access to the weapons after World War II, to keep the use of the bomb off the table during the conflicts of the late 1940s and early 1950s, when the United States could have used nuclear weapons without fearing any kind of retaliation in kind. And it is a major factor that Nagasaki is not just the second use of an atomic bomb in war, but was the last use of one, at least so far. So this is giving you a bit of the flavor of the book and its argument. It's about looking at Truman and trying to see the ways in which his personal views changed the course of policy regarding the atomic bomb afterwards. And I go through all of his major atomic decisions through the early 1950s, again, up through the Korean War. This is a radical set of conclusions, I believe. I think they should significantly change how we think about Truman and how we think about early atomic policy. And my ultimate argument is that while Truman's atomic legacy must include the fact that he was the president when the atomic bomb was used, and that this weapon was used against cities during World War II, I think Truman himself would have insisted on us thinking of him in that way. He took his responsibility very seriously, even if he may have been misunderstood what it was. But I think our understanding of his legacy should also be to give some credit to him for the fact that atomic weapons were not used in war since then. And so that's a more complicated legacy. If you find all of this description a little unintuitive and my story a little surprising and perhaps hard to believe, I understand. I myself was quite surprised to find that this was the case because it went against decades of scholarship on the subject. But the more I looked at the archival documentation with a fresh pair of eyes, the more I stopped reading essentially these memoirs, which are very self-serving and often do not reflect how people thought at the time. And the more I really focused in on this question of what does Truman know? What does he think he knows? But doesn't know, how does his beliefs and feelings about the bomb change the decisions he made and really what was going on in those decisions? The more I became convinced that this was a much better, much more plausible way to understand Truman and his relationship with the atomic bomb than any of the other narratives that I had read about it. All right. Thank you for listening. I hope this got your interest a little bit. If you're skeptical, again, feel free to be skeptical, but maybe look at the evidence. I hope you enjoy the book. Thank you very much.